Welcome to this week's Investors Chronicle Personal Finance Podcast. I'm Lenora Walters, and joining me today are Kate Bailey, Deputy Personal Finance Editor at Investors Chronicle, and special guest Patrick Connolly, Certified Financial Planner at Chase de Vere. There have been a number of surprises over the past 3 weeks, and one of the latest was yesterday's decision by the Bank of England not to cut interest rates, as had been widely predicted, but to continue to hold them at the current level of 0.5%. Even without a cut, interest rates and cash returns are very low. So Pat, is there anything investors can do to boost the returns on the low-risk sections of their portfolios?
I think the starting point is to appreciate that we are, and we have for some time, been in a low interest rate environment. And it certainly seems that's not going to change for some time as well. So I think the starting point is to make sure people have their expectations set. Gone are the days where you're going to get 5 or 6% income with taking minimal risk. The income levels now are much lower. And if you want to achieve a higher level of income, you have to accept you need to be taking more risks.
Now, a lot of people suggest that one way to go up the risk curve is to go into equity income at times like these. Now, this is a lot less racy than some sections of the equity market, but the point is, it's equity and it still falls in volatility like we've had recently and may continue to have. So if you deciding, weighing up what to do, what's the minimum risk profile or tolerance that you need to have to invest in equity income?
It really does depend and vary from person to person. I mean, most income investors tend to be fairly cautious, and so they probably wouldn't want all of their money invested in equities. And so the approach that we would take would be, yes, we'd include equity income, not just UK, but also global equity income. We would also include fixed interest. And despite all of the recent developments in client portfolios, we'd also have an allocation to property as well.
Okay. Now, I suppose we've been maybe looking at the negative effects of low rates, but this decision to hold things where they are, does it benefit any type of assets?
I guess the answer would be savings accounts, but then savings accounts mostly are paying next to nothing anyway, so the difference is marginal. In terms of other asset classes, it's difficult to have a direct link between interest rates and equity performance and fixed interest in performance. We saw yesterday when there was the expectation that interest rates were going to be cut, the equity markets rose. That's based on sentiment, it's based on expectation. And similarly with the fixed interest market, they make expectations in terms of where they think interest rates are going to move. And so both equity and fixed interest markets will move more or less depending on whether those expectations are met, more than actually whether there's a movement or not.
Now, you've mentioned fixed interest a couple of times. Are there, you know, for that area, obviously some of it's very low, like gilts. So, I mean, what kind of fund should investors be looking at?
It's a good question. I mean, for many years now, or it seems like many years, certainly a handful of years, people have been saying that fixed interest is expensive and there are far more risks on the downside. And yet it keeps producing positive returns. And we keep seeing the yields on gilts and other fixed interest instruments reducing all of the time. So it's difficult to sit here and say that fixed interest offers value, but it would have been difficult to do that a few years ago. In terms of where to invest, I couldn't sit here and say that government bonds are outperform corporate bonds or high yields. It's really difficult to make those decisions. And so the funds that we tend to use on our client portfolios are strategic bond funds, those where the manager has the flexibility to move around different instruments, because we want to hold fixed interest in our client portfolios because they provide protection and some security alongside equities. But with areas looking very expensive, you also need to be aware of the risk you're taking there as well. And we would rather hand those decisions over to managers that we trust to make them.
Okay. Which some strategic bond funds do you particularly like?
There are a few that we like. I mean, we like the Jupiter strategic bond is one we use. The Henderson strategic bond is another. Kames strategic bond is another. We try to look for managers who are doing different things. What we don't want to do is, in a client portfolio, invest in three strategic bond funds where the managers all have a fairly similar approach. And so with Henderson, for example, there may be more in high yield. With Kames, probably the other way around and less in that area. And Jupiter is certainly fully flexible fund as well. So the three together tend to work pretty well.
Okay, no change might suggest that for investors it's business as usual, but there's still a possibility rates might be cut in August and perhaps again later this year. So should you do anything to your portfolio to prepare?
It's really difficult. I mean, for the last 7 years, there has been a general expectation, almost 100%, that the next movement in interest rates was going to be upwards. It's just a case of when it was going to happen, and it was moved back and back, and when it was going to happen, and suddenly... And now the expectation is they'll come down. And again, there's a lot of consensus behind that. And it's easy to follow the crowd and easy to think, yeah, that is what's going to happen. I don't understand why people are still making interest rate predictions, because it's proved to be incredibly, incredibly difficult. So I think on that basis, it's also difficult to manoeuvre your portfolio based on that, especially as the Bank of England haven't really got much to play with. I mean, interest rates are currently only 0.5%. Carney has said he's not looking to move into negative interest rates. And so on that basis, the maximum cut has to be only 0.5%.
Well, some useful points. I suppose otherwise we'll just have to wait and see what happens in August. Now, talking of income-bearing investments, last week a number of commercial property funds suspended investors from taking out or putting money in after a deluge of withdrawal requests in the wake of the vote to leave the European Union. As well as raising questions about the prospects for commercial property, it's also raised questions about how suitable open-ended funds are for getting exposure to this asset. Pat, do you think open-ended funds are still a viable way for investors to put their money into commercial property?
Open-ended funds are not perfect, but I think they are still probably the best solution. The starting point is you have to realise that commercial property is an illiquid asset. It isn't easy. If you look at your own house, your own property you may own, that's an illiquid asset. You think of the size and scope of some of these commercial properties, that's far more illiquid as well. And so if you're investing into it, you need to be taking a long-term perspective. You should not be looking at short-term tactical trades that some people might do with equities, for example, but commercial property is a completely different game. And so investors need a completely different mindset. We only invest in bricks and mortar commercial property in open-ended funds. The reason for that is with closed-ended funds, they are listed on the stock markets and they tend to have far more correlation with the markets as well. They'll go up and down with market movements. Now, the reason that we invest in commercial property, the two reasons, one is for income and two is for diversification benefits alongside equities and fixed interest in particular. Now, if you're looking at property investment trusts, if you're looking at REITs, they tend to be more highly correlated to equities, which defeats one of the major purposes of us holding them in the first place.
Yeah. Talking of the virtues of commercial property, in view of what's happened, should you still have it in your portfolio at the moment?
If you've got it, it's probably difficult to get out of it.
Let's say you're not in one of these poor investors who's gated into a fund. If you have the option of adding or being out, is this a relevant addition to portfolios at the moment?
We include commercial property in our client portfolios, typically anywhere from 5% to 12% of a portfolio. So in terms of liquidity of the overall portfolio, it's not a huge issue. Mm. You can argue at any given moment that there have been plenty of times that equity markets have suffered major losses and have been in the doldrums. You could turn around and say, well, should you be invested in equities on the basis that they've performed so badly? Property is an asset that will have times when it performs well and times when it performs badly. And we saw what happened in 2007, 2008, which is a sort of similar time to where we are now in terms of managers suspending trading. This will ride its way through. How long it takes, I don't know. How much property funds may fall in the meantime, I don't know that either. But if you're taking a long-term perspective, which you should be if you're in commercial property, and you sit tight, then this should, over the course of time, work its way through. The problem comes whether it's when equity markets have performed badly or now with property, will people panic and sell out at the wrong time?
What would you say, what are the kind of virtues of having it at this moment in time? What does it do for your portfolio?
The properties, despite everything that's going on, the properties are still there. The tenants are sitting in the property still there. The tenants are still there paying their rent. All of that is happening. What we've had here is a lot of negative sentiment in the run-up to the EU referendum. People were drawing their positions for fear of what might happen if the vote was to leave. And then since then, we've had further withdrawals as well, which creates a big problem for property managers, because if they're paying withdrawals, they either do that from cash or selling property shares, which they can do. And most of them have had a fair liquidity buffer before, or they get to the stage where they may be forced to sell properties. Now, if you're having a fire sale of a big commercial property and you're trying to sell it over a short period of time, that's incredibly difficult and you're not going to get a good price. And so the reason why the companies have suspended trading is to protect the interest of existing longer-term investors. And so we would agree entirely with that approach.
We've been talking about the issues with the different kinds of funds, and it seems that no fund is an ideal way into commercial property. Mm-hmm. So can, if you're a small private investor, is there any other way than a fund or an investment just to get into property?
Well, unless you're going to buy a single property, which for most people won't be realistic in terms of the cost,
you
can get access to commercial property in multi-asset funds, and you can get a bit of access there. Although, in fairness, most multi-asset funds only have a small proportion in property anyway.
Yeah.
And so the best approach and the approach that we take is to include it within an overall portfolio. But actually, you need to limit the amount. You wouldn't want 50% of a portfolio sitting in property, because then your own personal liquidity becomes an issue. From our perspective, where we've got 5% to 12%, if people need to get their hands on some money, the fact that the property funds have ceased or suspended trading actually isn't a huge concern for them.
Okay, so collective funds, but not too many of them. Just obviously, we've been talking quite a bit about income. What would you say, are other areas for income at the moment?
Well, the main areas and the main ones we would use would be equities, both UK and global, fixed interest, yes, cash for a part but paying next to nothing, property, yes. I think one area that is going to develop over the course of time is the absolute return side.
Mm.
Now,
it's not typically associated income,
is
it? Not at all.
No, I think the only fund out there might be the Aviva fund, but I've heard murmurs and rumours that there may be other companies who are looking to launch income versions, and it makes sense, because if people are looking at absolute return now, which many people will do because they'll be looking for security in their portfolios, they may not trust fixed interest where it is, they probably don't trust property today, absolute return fills a place there. But if they need income as well, why wouldn't you have something that combines the two? Now, it's a challenge, because a lot of the underlying investments you might hold in an absolute return fund aren't income generating, but there are ways and means around it, and Aviva have done that, and I would be surprised if others don't follow suit in the short term. And that might possibly open another option for people to diversify their portfolio and still get a reasonable level of income.
Okay. And I suppose there are a number of bond or indeed absolute return funds. So maybe it's not that impossible.
Yeah. But even where you're using derivatives and the like, even though they wouldn't naturally produce income, there are ways and means. I mean, Aviva have done it. And as I say, I would not be at all surprised if in the coming months we see other providers doing something similar.
Yeah. I suppose you could say that funds like the Schroder Income Maximizer are already using derivatives to generate income. Anyway. Yeah. But interesting. So I guess, watch this space. Now, the UK's vote to leave the European Union has had dramatic consequences for a number of investment areas other than commercial property, and these include exchange-traded funds, or ETFs for short. In this case, so the consequences haven't necessarily been negative. Kate, you've been following the moves in the ETF market since the Brexit vote 3 weeks ago. What's been happening?
Well, yeah, ETFs very popular following in terms of trading following Brexit. In fact, Brexit caused the biggest ever trading day for ETFs on the LSE on the 24th of June. So yeah, people have really been piling in, both buying and selling, and driving up the order books there, yeah.
Okay. Which ETFs were popular then?
So the iShares Core FTSE 100 has been massively popular, and in fact was the seventh most traded of all products on the London Stock Exchange for June. So that's massive. I mean, ETFs have actually struggled to make it into the top 10 traded products on the LSE until now, but in June they really made it in there. So it just goes to show how much people have been using them. And then gold ETFs have been used a lot, but also short and leveraged, which we don't talk about a lot because they're quite complicated, but they're often used very tactically by particularly institutional investors to hedge bets one way or the other on movements of, you know, major indices.
Okay, and these short and leveraged, are they a good idea for everyone?
No, definitely not a good idea for everyone. You can make pretty massive losses if you if you bet the wrong way. It's essentially like, you know, multiplying your bet on a movement of the market. So if you go the wrong way, then you can make enormous losses. But they are used very tactically by big investors.
Okay. Why do investors turn to ETFs in volatile markets?
Well, they're very... there's a number of benefits. I mean, they're very low cost, obviously, and they're very liquid because, I mean, unlike the kind of funds we've just been hearing about and the open-ended ones, they trade on secondary markets, so they're easy to get in and out of. And with these massive trading volumes, it's very easy to get a very tight spread when you buy and sell. So that makes it quite appealing to make short-term trades. I mean, we wouldn't normally, you know, recommend making very short-term trades, but they are used by a wide range of investors, both as long-term positions, which are low cost, and short-term positions, which you can make kind of short-term bets on the market.
Okay. Pat, do you use the ETFs for your clients, and do you think they're good instruments in current market conditions?
They can be good. We use them very rarely. They're ideal for tactical investors because you can deal real-time trading, so you can buy and sell instantaneously, which is beneficial. As Kate says, they're low cost as well, and with an ETF, you haven't got to worry about underperformance. Also, as well, you get access to a lot of different investment types and different asset classes, which would be really difficult to access elsewhere. Our position from Chase de Vere standing is that we don't invest in esoteric areas. We wouldn't invest in some of the areas Kate's been describing. We wouldn't invest in individual commodities or anything like that. Right. And we don't take tactical bets. And so where we use passive funds, we tend to be using them for mainstream core stock markets. And for that, we tend to use trackers rather than ETFs. Part of that is logistical because the tracker funds are on and available on all of the main platforms we use. ETFs are not. And so if we've got two instruments that are broadly doing the same job, it makes sense from an admin perspective for ourselves and our clients to have everything together rather than having a separate ETF away from that. But I can see for certain types of investors and certainly some of the institutional investors where they could have a place. It's just they don't fit in with what we do.
In terms of using tracks and passives, are there any particular markets you like to use them in?
Typically large cap UK and US equities.
Markets that are hard to beat.
The more efficient markets, probably more in the US than anywhere else. But yeah, the more efficient markets. In other areas, if you're looking at smaller companies, if you're looking at emerging markets or Far East or areas that perhaps are a little bit more inefficient, then we're hopeful at least, that an active manager would be able to outperform.
Okay, some useful points. Thanks for that. That's all we've got time for this week, so it just remains to thank Patrick Connolly, Certified Financial Planner at Chase de Vere, and Kate Bailey, Deputy Personal Finance Editor at Investors Chronicle. You can read more on commercial property investment trusts and ETF trading in this week's issue of Investors Chronicle and the website. Thank you for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.